It is a great pleasure to welcome to European Investing Summit 2022 returning MOI Global Instructor Jeremy Quicks, co-founder and managing director of HC Capital Advisors based in Germany. Prior to co-founding HC Capital, Jeremy worked at Discover Capital as an investment analyst and later as co-portfolio advisor of the fund Squad Growth. Previously, he worked at Forum Family Office, a value-oriented investment manager based in Munich. He graduated from EM Lyon Business School in France with an MSc in management. Always a pleasure to have you with us, Jeremy. Thank you so much for joining us again this year. I look forward to your presentation and would like to turn it to you now. Please go ahead.
Hi, John. It's a pleasure to be back. So let's turn on page two. So on page two, you have a disclaimer. Please read it. And we just highlighted some elements. It's only my opinion. You know, there could be mistakes or anything, and it does not necessarily represent the position of the company I work for. So this year I will present LDC, a French company active in the chicken segment. Actually, it's the largest chicken not producer. They work with farmers, but this is the largest chicken meat producer in France. It's a family business. The company started over 100 years ago, 100 years ago. And in 1970, they decided to merge with some other families. So you had two families at the beginning, Lambert and Daudard and Chancerolles. So this is the LDC. This is where the LDC name comes from. In 1970, they had something like 12 million euro in revenue and 90 people. And today they generate more than 5 billion in revenue with more than 23,000 people. You can see at the bottom of the slide, you have the track record in terms of sales, EBITDA margin. And then on the right part, you have the equity per share and the return on equity over the years. So it's a very traditional market leader with good business economics, and which is currently trading at a very low price to book, as you can see on slide four. So actually, we are at the lowest price to book over the last 20 years. Last time it happened, that was in 2003 and 2009, so during recession and crisis. In 2003, you had as well a very large bird flu in France, which impacted sales and as well the perception of the company from the investors. So we are back to this, let's say, low price to book, historically low price to book. We'll see whether there is an opportunity or not. So currently there's high uncertainty. There's a bird flu again this year. Close to 20 million animals were killed between August 2021 and May 2022 in France alone. And the poultry production was down 10% in the first part of 2022. So this is a big pocket of uncertainty. Then you have inflation. You have a huge inflation in input prices. So either the corn, wheat, so the cereals. Then you have as well inflation in energy and in labor cost. So these are all feeding through the production cost of chicken. And there's uncertainty whether the company will be able to pass it through or not. So egg cost production as well doubled over the last year. And then there's a third pocket of uncertainty is more the trend towards vegetal food and especially vegetal meat. Beef consumption per capita has been in decline for many years now, at least in France and in other European countries as well. Vegan is trendy. You have lots of VC funding and lots of money flowing to this sector. And there's as well an ESG aspect in terms of animal well-being and CO2 emission, which are all impacting the perception of meat consumption and chicken within them. So let's look at these three elements. So maybe on the bird flu, this is the easiest one. So as you can see, there was a big impact in production in the first part of the year. But since July, production is somehow catching up and recovering towards more normal levels. You have the data for France. Sorry, it's in French. There's no public data published in English. So, and at the same time, the impact on LDC sales was not that huge. There was a decline in volumes of 3% in Q1. So Q1 is from March till May. And then Q2 is from June till August. So you had a bigger impact in Q2. At the same time, they were able to balance it out with the production facility in Poland and Hungary. And so for the overall, for the overall group, production volumes were down single digit in H1. So currently, there are two big labs which are working on vaccines. They're running tests, and we could expect EU approval in 23 or maybe 24. It could be quite long to completely roll out. But it feels like it will not be a recurring event, that chicken production will not stay low for a long period of time. The production cycle is quite short as well, 8 to 12 weeks. So 8 is for the standards and 12 weeks is for the more higher price type of chicken, the free range chicken. And the recovery for chicken will be quite quick. But the recovery for the turkey and the ducks will be a bit slower or will take longer because you have to rebuild the genetic pool. So it could take one more year. But this is an issue. It's not a major issue. It's not that they will lose 20% of production volumes. And it will be, it should be short-lived at least. So if we move to prices, so you had a huge input cost increase over the last 2 years. Something like 31%. You can see it on the left part. So here you have the different cereals, soya, corn, wheat, which went up. That led to a 100% increase in the feeding part. That led to a 52% increase in the cost of the chicken. And then you have all the costs that we don't see on the slide, but you have as well energy, labor. So it's all inclusive. And all inclusive, it was 31% input price increase. So far, so that was until May 2022, they got 25% price increase. And they had another 10% in the summer. So you can see it. Here you have only the price component for France and for Poland and Hungary. And you see that we were running at something 5% price inflation until November 2021, and it started to increase much more in 2022. So at for Q2, so from June to August 2022, they had an average price increase of 24.4%. So this is the actual price increase that they put through to customers. We are actually coming back from a period of low inflation. So that was around 0.5% per year since 2010. So there are some mixed effects as well in this graph, because here they decided to enter into the chicken for restaurant. So they did they acquired a company which was bankrupt. So it diluted as well the mix here a lot. But here you can see there was almost no inflation from 2017 until 2020. So we are coming out of a period of low inflation. So the inflation for the chicken part is not the big issue because they're clearly the dominant player. They have 60% market share, and especially for large retail chain like Carrefour, Auchan, Leclerc, they are really the only big supplier, and they are the only one we can secure production volumes and production. So this is really not an issue to pass it through to customers and to the big retail chains. And they have been able to do it. They have been able to do it in the past. And so the question is more, what price are the customer willing to pay? How elastic is the demand? And so far it was okay. So volumes were down only because of the pandemic. There was no the bird flu. There was no very big decline due to consumption. If we look at, they have another, they have another business which is which accounts for 18% of profit, which is the Traiteur business, so the ready meal division. They produce different types of ready meal products, either fresh or frozen. And this division, even though they are the market leader, they do not have the same dominance in the market, and they don't have the same pricing power. So this division, they had as well something like 20% price increase over the last 2 years, so from 2020 to 2022. And they have not been able to manage price increases as they wished. So they had something like 6%. It stayed there for a while, and now I think in Q2, so from July to August, it was only 12%, and they would need to reach closer to 20%. So it was not. I think they're still missing something like 5 to 7% price increase. So this division will be impacted in H1, and maybe, I mean, for the full year as well, and maybe next year. But again, it accounts for 18%, and the company already signaled that they will be able to balance the loss of this one. So they expect the profit margin, the EBITA, to be stable for the group in H1 and for the full year. So now if we move to the more long-term risk with meat consumption levels. So there was a study in 2019 from Ipsos. We showed that 4% of the population is vegan, and an additional 3 are aspirational vegan. So they would like to become vegan or to eat less meat or no meat at all within 5 years. So there's clearly a trend towards this. But then there's as well a very strong trend towards more premium products, so free range, local production, and so on, which is the core of LDC. Younger, and then there's another very, very interesting element, is that younger generation on average eat more chicken than their parents, which is completely the opposite, for example, than the TV consumption. So TV consumption is very large I don't have a TV. My parents have 2 TVs. They watch maybe, I don't know, 2 to 3 hours per day of TV. And you see that with each generation passing, so with the population aging, so people will watch less and less TV, and the decline rate should accelerate. And here we have the opposite. We have actually more consumption for the younger generation. Chicken is more, easier to cook. It's more convenient, and it's lighter as well. And you don't have to prepare with sauces and so on. So it's definitely much easier. So younger generation eat more chicken, so it will as well support chicken consumption. It should be able to support chicken consumption. There was as well a question on about ESG. So chicken has a much lower CO2 footprint than beef, for example. So it's as well... not something that we say we have to, switching to chicken in the first place and then maybe becoming vegan is as well good for the planet. So it's not that chicken is really the thing to kill, to stop eating. Animal well-being is a big issue. So far there has been no LDC, no scandal in one of the many LDC slaughterhouse. I knock on wood at the same time. The slaughterhouse are very highly mechanized, they have had this track record for many years of really investing a lot in the sector. Actually, they are the only company with a net cash position in the sector. They're taking market share every year. They're really investing for the long term. So they really, and you can see in the cash flow as well, that they really overinvest since many years to automatize, to mechanize the production. So the slaughterhouse are quite safe, I guess. Then there was a scandal last year in November 21, but it was at a farmer which was working for one of the LDC brand. I think it was Le Gaulois. So there's an NGO in France which is called L214, they really follow these things very carefully. They have been able to, they have found many scandals over the years in different slaughterhouses and so on. And this one was the first one at one of the farmer which is linked to LDC. The group follows this very carefully. And they clearly state in the annual report and everywhere that they want to improve animal well-being. They track something like 15 KPIs for animal well-being, including the level of antibiotics they take, including the dark points on their feeds and so on. So on their feet. So it's really, they really follow these things very closely, and they want to improve on this one. At the same time, they have to find a way between. Prices customers are really ready to pay, and the production cost. And so 20% of the production is free range, and it's really at the high level, but it's high cost, sometimes more than 50% more expensive than the normal product. So they are very focused on this. So here we have seen briefly the three pockets of uncertainty at the moment, but we believe there is uncertainty, but at the same time, there's probably low risk and potentially a nice opportunity. And we'll cover the low risk aspect. So first, chicken consumption is still growing. It's actually the only meat which is still growing. You don't really see it well here, sorry, but it's the blue line. So the blue line is the chicken consumption, and it's still growing for many years. And the chicken consumption per capita is growing as well at something like 2.2% per year since 2007. And it is expected to grow slightly below 1% for the coming years. So you still have, let's say, volume growth on a per capita basis. At the same time, is the cheapest meat. Again, you don't see it very well here. Sorry, that's a graph I took from one of their presentation. But on average, they expect chicken meat to be around 9 euro per kilo, while pigs are at around 10.6. Beef is around 20.8, and the other ones are around there as well. So it's the cheapest meat, and of course, where customers are down trading because of inflation, it should help as well. So market value is actually is driven by innovation. And you can see here the different product they call innovation. So in the chicken industry, innovation is from, you have cut product, pre-cut product, pre-fried product, pre-cooked product, these type of elements. Chicken, which looks like a steak. So all these things are called innovation. And the company has been really focused on this. So since many years, they are increasing the share of innovation within the product range. I mean, it will depend. All brands do not have the same ability to manage this. So Louis is really the old traditional free range, high quality chicken that you buy as a roll usually. So they don't have the same ability to offer this product. It would hurt the brand, so they don't do it. And here I made a comparison of the different of the price levels. So the normal, let's say the cheapest chicken is around 6 euro per kilo, the full chicken, so with the bones, with everything. Then if you move to high quality chicken, you're around 10 euro per kilo. For organic one, you're maybe 20% higher, around 11, 12 And then when you move to the what they call elaborated products, which are pre-cooked or pre-cut or different levels of quality, then you have much higher prices, sometimes up to up to 37 euro per kilogram for only this pre-cut for a very special part of the chicken. And then, I mean, chicken sausages, it's much higher price than the average chicken. So it's really, the market is driven by volume growth. And at the same time, you have an amplifier with the value growth. As people buy more and more pre-cut and pre-fried and pre-cooked product, the value of the market grows much faster than the volume. I mean, excluding inflation. So inflation would be on top. So you have this driver as well, which makes the overall chicken market quite interesting, actually. Then we have a company which has a very, very strong track record. As I said, they have become the number one player in France with 60% of the production in market share and 40% of the consumption. So it's due mostly, the difference is due to the fact that restaurants are mostly buying their chicken from importers. These are frozen chickens and stuff like this from Eastern Europe, where the price difference used to be close to 15%. And every year it has become lower. I think now we are around 5% or a bit less than 5% price difference between chicken produced in France and chicken produced in Eastern Europe. And at least for LDC. And as well, there's a new law at the moment, which has been passed this year, which will force the restaurant to show the origin of the meat they sell, including chicken. It was already the case for beef and pork, but now it will include chicken as well. And this, will motivate people to switch to French-based, French-grown chicken. It's already the case for McDonald's and KFC and so on. So they are clearly the dominant player, and they generate 50% of sales with branded products, 30% from white label, and 20% from bulk. They have the leading brands in the French market. So Louis, Le Gaulois, Maître Coq are really the leading brands for chicken product. And then you have Marie, which is the leading brand. I think they have something like 97% brand awareness. Or 95% brand awareness for the ready meal division. You see the cash EPS over time, as well as the dividend payouts. So they're very focused on reinvesting in the business and growing the business. Return on equity and return on tangible capital employed was steady. They always had a large net cash position. So it was they are not optimizing the balance sheet at all. They're very careful. Here I wanted to explain the Marie story. So they acquired the company in 2009. it was owned by Unique PLC before, and when they acquired the brand, it had something like 270 million in sales. So it doubled the size of LDC Traiteur business. But the brand was loss-making. It had been loss-making for many years. It was barely at break-even in 2008. So they still paid 70 million. And back then, most people thought, okay, it was a big mistake. They should not have done it. They will never earn money in this sector. And that's true. I mean, for many years, it was loss-making and it was difficult. But I remember meeting the CEO and he said, don't worry, we'll make money on this one. We'll invest. We'll take the long view to actually make money. And that was true. You can see on the left part, the small graph, the bottom left. So you have the EBITA per ton in this division and the EBITA margin as well. So you can see it was loss-making for a period of time, for 5 years, and then it turned positive. And last year, it was the highest margin in the group, 5.1%, and one of the highest EBITA per ton. So it was they really made it, but they had this long-term view. They invested a lot in the automation, the production. and they invested as well a lot in the quality of the product. So most of the products are A or B rated. So in France, you have this this rating for the quality of the product, whether it's good for your health or not, whether you should eat a lot of it or not. So you have A, B, C, D, E, I think. And basically, if you're A and B, it's green, it's nice, it's not so bad. And then if you're in the D and E, it means it's very it's very fat, it's very sugary. So it's not good for your health and for your weight. So something like, from the top of my mind, something like 70%, 80% of the product is A or B. And they're very focused on this. They've really built products and the brand which answers the need of the customer. So they're very focused on renewing the product portfolio quite often. And basically, you can see it here on the right part. You have a slide, which a graph which shows the market share. So basically, in a market which is not very dynamic, they were able to increase their market share from 25 to 35% in the fresh part of the fresh product. And in the frozen product, they increased from 11 to 18%. and the other interesting element is that the white label went from 28 to 19%. So it means that price is not the only thing that matters. So you really need to offer, of course, an interesting price, but at the same time, you need to offer a product which meets the need of the customers. And it's really what they did. So Mari is really a success story, and it shows the ability of the business to execute well and to have this long-term view. Then I wanted to finish with the shareholding structure. So the shareholding structure has been steady for many years. You have the founding families plus some external investors from the agro business in France. The employees have 2%, and then the managers bought last year 2% of the capital at 80 euro per share. They had to put their own money in to secure a bank lending that was through a reserve capital increase. And it's really to motivate all the top managers. Another interesting element is that the CEO, the chairman and former CEO, Denis Lambert, bought 2 million worth of shares in the summer. But it's, again, it's less than what he received as a dividend. The free float is only 11%. So it's not a huge free float. I think it should be something like 200 million free float. But the thing is, you're investing with many families, not only one. So it secures you from one family, you know, taking control and not listening to you. So you're just doing business when you're just invested with people with skin in the game. And the fact that it's a multifamily structure, it's, I think, very interesting for securing long-term performance and interest for everybody. So what can we expect in terms of return? So they have published this year a 2026-27 ambition. So 7 billion in sales, 8% EBITDA. So if they achieve this, it means something like 7% top line growth and EBITDA growth per year. And but the EBIT should grow a bit faster than the EBITDA. As I mentioned previously, there is one specific element that's that over the last 5-6 years, they really overinvested. They invested heavily in order to mechanize, to automate the production. And I think they more than doubled the tons produced per employee. So they were buying something like 100, 150 robots per year. So the KUKA robots. So it's highly automated. They invested a lot in the equipment. And I believe from my discussion with them is that this investment should flatten out and that the capital intensity of the business should be a bit lower in the coming years. So I think that the EBIT should actually increase faster than the EBITDA. So you could have something maybe like 9% EPS growth for the next 5 years. I mean, if they achieve this, it would translate in an expected return per year north of 20%, depending as well on the, you would be closer to 20% if the price to book doesn't change. But if the price to book reverts to the historical range, so it used to be between 1 and 2 times, if it goes back to the higher part of the range around 2 times, then you could have a much higher return. So that was it, John. Happy to take your questions.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Jeremy. Appreciate the presentation. Perhaps your thoughts on capital allocation going forward. How do you see that mix? And is there anything you might prioritize differently than the management seems to be doing?
So, as I said, they invested really heavily over the last years. I'm just looking at the numbers at the moment. So from my discussion with them, I understood that the maintenance capex should be around 100 million. And since 2016, they invest on average something like 170 to 200 million. So they really invested much more than the maintenance capex. I believe that going forward, the capex should not increase much more. Should remain around 220, 230 million per year, and it will probably give them much more room for dividends, actually. If I look at the cash generation since since 2013, they generated something like 1.7 billion. They invested 10% in the working capital. It's normal. They have something like, I think some 15 days of sales in cash cycle. So they will need this to support growth anyway, but it will not be huge. They invested something like 850 million in growth capex for the development. And going forward, as I said, I think it will not. They will invest less of the cash flow every year in this, and they will invest more in dividends, probably. On the M&A side, they have been able to buy many companies close or at bankruptcy. So they invested only 250 million since 2013 in this. I think going forward, this part could be a bit more expensive. They have acquired all the weak players in France. They will not be allowed to acquire more companies in France, and they will need to expand in other countries. This year, they have done the first investment in UK in a specialized segment, so a company which does only free range or almost only free range chickens. So they follow the same strategy as they did in France. They start with the higher value part of the business of the market, and they start with companies with strong brands. So I think dividend and M&A should be a larger portion of the cash allocation in the near term. In terms of financial leverage, they have none. They have something like 200 million in, end of last year, they had 250 million in net cash. I think this year it will increase a bit. Depending on the working capital I think it should increase a bit at least. And as I said, the dividend historically was only 12% of the cash generation. Going forward, I hope it will go higher, around 20-25%. And this would fit as well with the strategy of the company and the generational change as well. There's a new generation coming. They would probably like to see higher dividend for the families, or maybe share buyback as well. So dividend and share buyback is usually the same line for us. Historically, there was none.
So just to understand your potential return expectation here, it sounds like about high single digit from the business itself, the growth in the business, and then some multiple expansion on the price to book side. Is that correct?
So, I mean, if you don't have any, multiple expansion, you should be around 16, 18% without multiple expansion. You have something like a, I mean, on the, if you correct on, I mean, if you correct the cash, the capex for the maintenance part, if you take only this part into account, you have something like, 16% free cash flow yield currently. They trade at a P of 9 on last year. And the cash adjusted, it's 8.8. So you have the business, let's say, yielding something like 10% on a steady basis, and then you have the growth on top. So you get to something like 16, 18%. And then if you have the multiple expansion, then you go closer to 35, 40% per year.
Okay. What would you say, you know, let's say we are out 3 years from now and the idea has not worked out. What do you think would be the most likely reason? In other words, what's kind of a post-mortem here, if you will?
So a pre-post-mortem.
Pre-mortem.
Pre-mortem. I think the way the market looks at the company is the thing that bothers me. I mean, or is we're a bit unsure, is that many people look at it and say, "Oh, chicken is not very interesting," and it's the part where I see. I mean, I talk to many other investors in France, and they will say, "Oh yeah, I know the company. They work well, but I don't know. Chicken is not an interesting thing to buy. There is no potential. There is nothing." So I think that the market perception could be the disappointing factor here. I don't expect the financials KPI to really, to change a lot. And the company has net cash, even though they need to invest a lot more, they will be able to finance it. They have been heavily investing for the last years. I think that would be this, or they do an acquisition which is loss making for a couple of years, as it was the case with Marie, and which impacts performance and as well market perception. I mean, they have a long term view, so they could really sustain losses for 4 to 5 years without putting the company in danger, but they would be ready to do it, and this could impact performance, financial performance. So I think these are the two elements where I'm a bit unsure.
That's very helpful. Well, I think I'll leave it there. Would just encourage MOI members to feel free to follow up with any further thoughts or questions. Jeremy, thank you so much once again for taking the time to join us again this year and share this investment thesis with the MOI Global community.
Thank you, John.
Goodbye for now.